Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. This Thursday, I have with me a guest who appeared, I don't know when, maybe 2 years ago on the show. It's amazing to say that. This will be our third, this is completing my third year on the radio show, and we'll be starting our fourth year in a few months. So I'm really excited to have Jo-Jan Jonkers here with us today, and he's from the Netherlands, commonly known in America as Holland. And I invited Jo-Jan because he's in the last few years embarked on quite an interesting adventure in him for himself, and that is he went back to school after many years and is studying what I consider to be, which may or may not be true, we'll hear from him shortly, spirituality, mysticism, and perhaps this was inspired by his practice as a Reiki student and master. Jo-Jan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Phyllis.
Yeah. So tell me about your school adventure. How did this happen for you?
As you mentioned in your introduction, I practice Reiki now for around about 12, 13, 14 years. I don't know, 15 maybe. I've lost track of time.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I'm for 12 years a master, and then 3 years ahead of that, so it must have been 15 years, something like that.
Uh-huh.
And during those 15 years, I experienced all kinds of things, and I also heard a lot of stories from my colleagues, Reiki masters, and when I asked to them what they thought about spirituality or mysticism, when I set out 10 questions, I received 20 answers. And I thought, what on earth are they talking about? And so I had already some plans to get deeper in this topic, and not only by practicing it, but also by trying to grasp it more in an analytic way. We always talk about the connection between mind and heart, or heart and head. And I think that with the practice, the heart part was already there, but the head part was a kind of missing.
Mm-hmm.
What on earth am I doing in this practice?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the using of the symbols is a part of that. That is definitely true.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So that's the introduction, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, it reminds me a lot of my own ever-present question about the balance of form and essence, which is where the radio show name came from. And it's like sometimes our form isn't really a physical form, but it's a form in the sense of, can we understand it? Is there something that we can connect to with our intellect? Or is it something that we can understand, maybe that doesn't have anything to do with a physical form or even a conceptual form, but is a way of understanding that comes from really deep inside of us as human beings. And then we enter into what I would call the mystical realm. So some people wouldn't call mysticism form, but but it's an interesting place to be in this kind of crossroads place. And I always had the feeling, Jo-Jan, when you talked to me about your schooling and so on, that was the place that intrigued you, was this place of the crossroads where form and essence somehow come together and they become one, and in that it's very difficult to separate which is which, and which is the mystery actually of it all.
Yes,
for me. Is that true?
Yeah,
for you?
Yeah, that's I couldn't say it better.
Uh-huh.
Probably only worse.
Thank you. But anyway, so in your schooling, where are you now as far as, you know, are you almost finished?
Yes, I'm now full-time writing at my master's thesis, which is about Reiki and mysticism. And for that occasion, I have asked the Dutch masters, which we call now the 10 plus masters, masters who are longer than 10 years Reiki master, to share some experiences. And they have given me 65 to 70 experiences. And what I'm doing now is to try to examine these stories to see if there is some kind of a red line in it, so that we can distinguish the specific form of the Reiki mysticism, so to say, and whether or not it is different from, let's say, mysticism in Buddhism or in Christianity. So what I try to do now, and it is quite a lot of work, it's more work than I thought it would be, is that you have to do it, because it's in an academical setting, you have to do it in a rather structured way. So
right.
You cannot start with experience 1 and end at experience 65 and then say, okay, this is it. So what I'm trying to do now is 10 general characteristics of mystic experiences to give a flavor, and that is for this occasion it is Christian, Buddhistic and New Age flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And what I then will do is analyze the 65 experiences and hold them against these three flavors, and then try to see whether they can be compared to Buddhist experience or to a Christian experience or a New Age experience, or that it is a new kind of experience that differs from these three.
Wow. Well, I can't wait to read it. I hope that you will send me a copy when you're finished.
Well, you have time to learn some Dutch until then.
Uh-oh. I forgot about that part. Okay, I start now.
Okay. Well, we arrange something.
Okay, well, that would be great.
I definitely have the intention to share the results with the Reiki community. That's absolutely true.
Yeah, it would be
fantastic.
Yeah, it would be fantastic. So, in my last few months, I've been going through all the what we call the elements of our practice, which contains the basic form. And interestingly enough, I have been able to also see this line that runs through each of the elements, which means that some elements seem to be more physical, but they end up being quite mysterious, like money. We... You know, in our, I think I will say we, and just our general society, think of money as coins and paper and our bank accounts as being very real and very physical. But what I realize is that what I don't really understand or I'm working toward realizing is that money is much more than the physical form of money. It stands for and represents a lot of essence, and that bridge is so torn up, I think, with all of my belief systems and my fears and so on, that it ends up to be quite muddled. And I've been fascinated by discovering that as I've gone through the elements over the last months, and now we're to symbols, which is another interesting place to be, because they actually have a physical form, we could call it, and yet, for me, very clearly, the symbols lead us somewhere into this crossroads between form and essence and mind and matter. So can you talk a little bit about your own, well, what can I call it? Your own ideas or theory or opinion, maybe all three combined, about the symbols and their place in our practice.
Yeah. Well, I've tried to do that today. As you know, I didn't have much time for preparation. What I've came up with is this point. What I've learned the last few years in this study is that in every practice, in every lived spirituality, or in every tradition, there can be found a journey from the human dimension to the transcendent dimension.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on the tradition itself, it is defined in a certain way. And it is the soul that makes the journey,
mm-hmm,
from the human dimension to the holy of the divine dimension. And the way I see it is that the vehicle for that journey, that is the practice.
Mm-hmm.
And the practice is given a shape by elements.
Mm-hmm.
And it is in theory for all traditions.
Mm-hmm.
And our tradition is then shaped by nine elements,
mm-hmm,
including the money and the symbols.
Mm-hmm.
So that is that is the beginning of how I see it. And then the next discussion is, of course, from okay, what do we then define as a divine dimension?
Mm-hmm.
And in your last radio show, you mentioned something that that the ultimate goal might be experience the One,
mm-hmm,
no space, no time, and so that may be the goal of our journey.
Mm-hmm.
And in our practice, in other practices, maybe something else, but in our practice, this might be that.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we have then that journey shaped by elements and also the symbols, because that is what we are talking about, the way I see it is that the symbols themselves for me do not mean so much, but the symbols get important in the use of the symbols, when you use them. And the way I see it is that when we use the symbols in performances, that is done in treatments and in initiations.
Mm-hmm.
That is where we use the symbols. And that is when the symbols make sense or get activated, or how you want to call it. And in a way, and that is a bridge to another part of the theory that belongs to initiation, certainly, belongs to the liturgy, how do you say that name?
Yeah, liturgy.
Liturgy of our practice.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a bridge to something else, because what is then the meaning of liturgy in a practice? Well, in a way, it is the connection of that what we consider as holy or divine and us as human beings. And for us, the core part of what is divine for this transcendence dimension is the Reiki energy. That's,
mm-hmm,
what it's all about. And I think so that the symbols are used as a way of communication between us and the other world, or maybe what you call the absolute universe, or the relative universe and the...
Yes.
The absolute universe.
Mm-hmm.
I think it has to do with that. And within the use of that symbols, that expresses also what we think of this universe, this universal energy. For instance, what you mentioned in your last radio show is that that you can do it at free will. On demand,
right?
So, and that is in a way, it's an axioma of how we think that this energy works. Also, with an initiation,
Well, just a sec. I just want to interrupt you. So I didn't quite understand where you were going with this. So this part about free will. So you used a word or an expression that I didn't understand. So,
For instance, with an initiation, if we do an initiation, it works always.
Well, it seems to, yes.
It seems to. And it's not, although in my practice up until today, it's never been that I did an initiation and that I had to say to the student, well, bad luck, energy wasn't there today, we do it another time.
Right, I understand.
So that's what I mean. In a way, we do it on demand.
We do it on demand, and according to myself, my own experiences over the last 30 years, and we'll combine yours over the last 12 years, and many, many other years of practice for masters, that it seems to work in the sense of connecting us with another plane of reality.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
This is how I see it also.
Uh-huh. And I just want to also go back and talk a little bit about your inclusion of the initiations having to do with symbols. And I think that we're bordering a little bit on whether or not this is public information, but now it is. And that's okay. But one of the things that the questions that come up to me about this particular element is, well, of course, they're the symbols for second degree, and what do they have to do with me, because I'm first degree student? And the interesting, and so I would really be interested in your response to that, and feel for myself that whether the first degree student knows the symbols or not, they are inherent, and their energy is inherent within the actual system of practice, which allows them to be present, whether the student has become acquainted with them personally or not. Would you say that's true for you?
Yes, I think so. But also, I think that the student gets acquainted with the symbols due to the initiation.
Uh-huh.
Although I don't let them see the symbols, but I use the symbols during the initiation, and therefore in an energetic way, or another level, so to say, they get to use them. They get knowledge of them.
Mm-hmm.
So that is also, I think, something like a crossroad between form and essence.
Mm-hmm. 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 So you used this, we were talking about the crossroads, and I'm just curious in your own, I like it that you've become an academic in these last years, because it's kind of an interesting, what should I say, sounding board for me, in that I have all these ideas, and I'm not an academic. I mean, I read, but I don't read particularly spiritual literature, and I don't read some of the things that might be interesting to me if I were in the academic world about spirituality and mysticism. I just try to experience it and be within my own practice. So it gives me a chance to join what I know in my experience to what the outer world kind of accepts as a normal way of talking about different realities or different realms of being within the human consciousness.
Yeah.
So thank you, Yo-Yeon, for your impulse to do this work.
Well, I must say it's a gift from heaven.
Oh,
for me.
Great. Wonderful.
Absolutely.
So would you say then that in your studies that you have found that mankind throughout the ages and also through all cultures tend to try to find a way to bridge these two worlds, the relative world, the world that we're born in and cope with most of our lives, and this absolute universe, which where I got these two terms was from a Japanese martial art, which reflects the Japanese mind on how it forms these two universes and allows the bridge to happen. So the absolute universe for me is really about not just being one, but relinquishing all separation.
Yes. I found in the literature a nice description for that. It was a non-discriminating consciousness.
Uh-huh. Non-discriminating consciousness.
Yes. So that there is no experience of subject and object.
Mm-hmm.
No here, no there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that it is, although that was a question, for maybe that's what you mean by it. And your first part of the question, I think that it is true that in most cultures, people have been wondering from looking up into the sky, from hey, what's there, and what are we doing here? And in general, people are always trying to make home for themselves in the cosmos,
mm-hmm.
and in society, and in and with themselves. So it's on three levels.
Mm-hmm.
And it is in the making home of the cosmos that I think that the symbols are used.
Mm-hmm.
Because in contrary with, for example, with speech and sound transmit information, but the symbol transmits a meaning, something else.
Oh, and what is that transmission?
What people try to do is to express their way of how they see the cosmos or the absolute universe. Or whatever mm-hmm. the realm you give it a name, and how to access it,
mm-hmm.
or to bridge it, in your words.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I know that there are people who come to Reiki classes and say, you know, I just don't like being in the physical world. And they, I translate them, that to mean, well, I'd rather live in the absolute. And,
I think it's a pitfall.
Huh?
It might also be a pitfall.
It is definitely a pitfall, because we can't escape the relative universe. But, being in the human body. But at the same time, there are people who somehow come to a balance of, perhaps, relative and absolute, or perhaps they actually live in the absolute universe in a human body, and maybe that's what's called enlightenment. And I've been really thinking about this since my last radio show, because I've thought, well, if there is a relative universe and an absolute universe, and we keep going back and forth between the two, then what is our goal? You mentioned that our goal might be in Reiki to come into this understanding of the absolute universe and having no time, no space reality. But in essence, that's one of the characteristics of the absolute universe. So for me, if we were going to have a goal, which I don't like to get into because I find that always awakens these ideas about doing performance and so on. So this is not about performance, but is really for me about being able as a human being to experience that there's more to life than all of our relative and relational concepts, that there's something greater than that. Or maybe greater is not the right word, something outside of that that allows us to be free,
yes,
beyond our constraints. And that this isn't a new idea or anything, but it is something that our practice of Reiki seems to bring us, whether we like it or not.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't search for this when I was, when I got into Reiki, it was really about a family duty and being able to honor my grandmother and her teaching and carry it on. And I was the person who was designated by the family to carry this on. So, lo and behold, much to my surprise, I ended up in this practice which, whether I liked it or not, brought me to this place of being able to be a human being and be totally in the relative world. That's where I felt like I was. And be able to have impinged upon me, without my actually desiring it, this experience of the absolute universe. And I wonder how many people who have taken Reiki have experienced that. Did you?
Maybe. It is difficult to... if I could say yes, that would mean that I could precisely define it.
Uh-huh, right.
And that's not so easy.
Right, well, there's a point there.
Yeah.
But in your living as a student before, as a person before having learned Reiki, or the practice of Reiki, did you feel like you lived mostly in the relative universe or in somehow longing for the absolute universe?
That's the correct word, longing.
Uh-huh.
Longing for something. And when Reiki crossed my path, I felt more intuitively that this was for me probably the right vehicle to answer to this longing.
Uh-huh.
And to get at some point.
Uh-huh.
And a few years ago when I had that, that was the conference of the Alliance in Gersfeld, you weren't there, I believe, that there was a treatment was on the auction, and it was performed by four Dakata masters. And it was during that treatment that I reached a point that I called it last time that there was nothing left except for the thought that I was thinking. And
interesting.
I felt that, yes, I felt that when I should let that last thought go, I would slip away or something like that.
Mm.
That was, I think, the point as far as you can get without giving up your identity,
mm-hmm,
or your the last part of yourself, mm-hmm, so to say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hmm. And has this experience come back in another way since then?
Because of that experience, I have more notice of the direction of the way.
Ah, right.
So I know where to go to.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like a compass. From okay, we can go for that direction, but you can. I cannot alter my consciousness in that state at will. It also.
Right.
There is some point when you cannot do it by yourself, but it is done. It takes place.
Right.
It's in a way, it's, you could say that it's given to you.
Mm-hmm.
And
so it's not simply that anybody would have had that experience given the circumstances, but it was a combination of you, your readiness, and the treatment by, you know, these four masters who all these factors and then probably other impulses that we don't even know about came together to give you this experience. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, that's what I experienced.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was the time and place.
It was the time and place for you.
Yes, and I because this auction was mentioned on the first day of the conference, and the auction itself was the fourth or fifth day, I don't know what. And during those days, I was constantly thinking about it from, it has to be for me or something like that.
Great. Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when we have these experiences, and I have had them also, not with the same impulse that you did, being treated by masters, but in my own way of working with myself, and sometimes it's when I'm sitting alone, and other times it's been through my experience of the practice of Reiki. So my treating someone and having a very unusual experience, and an experience of what I would call the absolute universe, where the separation between myself and the other person is totally gone.
Yes.
And I feel that for, you know, all people who do hands-on treatment, this is a possibility every time we do a treatment.
Yes, I think so also.
Mm-hmm. And
that's why I'm sure that that's one of the reasons that we have to do the treatments.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is, it gives us the possibility for an entrance.
Yes.
It is a possibility to bridge the gap.
Uh-huh. And the fascinating thing for me is that it seems easier to do, especially in the beginning, when we're treating someone else. It's like a projection of ourselves. And then when we treat ourselves, very often, students and myself included, kept thinking, well, but it's not, I feel the energy when I'm treating someone else, but I don't feel the energy much when I treat myself. And and that was always an interesting question mark, until eventually, when I had enough experience, my self-treatment became as interesting, I will say, use that word, as treatments that I was doing on other people, with other people.
Yeah. Well, there may also be a cultural influence, because in our Western world, maybe in Europe even more than in America, giving is more appreciated than doing something for yourself, that can be associated with selfishness.
Right, right.
It's easier to give away or to give a treatment in our practice than to treat ourselves.
Well, that in itself is such a healing, huh?
Yeah. Well, at some point when you discover that and you can treat yourself just as freely as someone else, then it's good and it's in balance, I think.
Yes, and I feel like this particular opening, and I will call it an opening because I believe that it opens the door to the next level of experience in the practice.
Treating yourself?
Yes. This comfortableness and this ability to treat oneself as easily and with as much profundity as treating someone else.
Yeah.
This particular gateway, and for some people it happens in a few months. Some people, like for me, it took several years to have this particular, I would say, opening happen. And once that did, then my whole practice deepened, not just this one bit.
I can imagine that. Then it's without judgment, in a way.
Yes. So, for instance, my understanding of the precepts changed dramatically. You know, I took more heed of them, and I didn't use them so much as rules, but saw that they were a way for me to investigate my own mind, for instance. And the same was also true with my use of the symbols at that point. I would treat other people, or I would use the symbols in treatment, and they were fine, and they worked, whatever that means in this moment. But when I went through this opening of being able to treat myself and have a profound experience of Reiki and this crossroads we were talking about of the relative and the absolute universe, then my experience deepened with my use of the symbols and, in fact, took me to a whole nother place, which again changed my whole practice. So it's like this ever-increasing spiral that gets stimulated by different parts of the practice.
Yes.
Did I lose you?
No.
Good, because somehow I almost lost myself. But it's an interesting thing for me to keep in mind that the practice is not something I do to be good at. The practice is something I do to open doors so that I may have deeper and more interesting experiences in myself as a human being.
Yes, the practice is our instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what, my guys, I can answer my longing with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or try to satisfy the longing.
Right. So, do you remember back when you decided to take second degree and what that was like for you in your first introduction to the symbols?
Yes, and when I got my first class, maybe I have to start before that. I went to my Reiki master.
Mm-hmm.
And when she had an information a gathering,
mm-hmm.
so that she spoke about Reiki, and there were some Reiki students who gave demonstration treatments.
Right.
And this or something like that. And when I was in that room, there were about 30 people, I could feel the energy in the air.
Really? Oh, and wow, that's great.
And it was even before someone laid his hands on me. And so at the end, I also received this demo treatment, and I was completely sold. I knew that is for me. and when I joined the Reiki 1 class, I already knew I will become a Reiki master.
That wow.
Quite clear from the first day on.
Uh-huh.
So, and in those days, we had the time and timing aspect that there should be at least 3 months between Reiki 1 and Reiki 2.
Uh-huh.
So I waited 3 months, and that was almost 3 months too long. and then I did my Reiki 2 class.
Uh-huh.
And in those days, it was appropriate that you should wait 3 years between Reiki 1 and Reiki Master. So after 3 years, I became a Reiki Master.
Uh-huh.
So it couldn't be done faster.
Uh-huh.
But, so there wasn't really a decision for a Reiki 2 class. It was immediately from this is my path up until the Reiki mastership.
Uh-huh. And then what was it like to know that you were going in Reiki 2 or second degree? Did you anticipate learning symbols? Or did you just think, okay, this is my step, this is the next thing I have to do?
Let's see. Well, I cannot recall exactly what I experienced, but I can remember that I started immediately to use the symbols, all three of them, as much as possible.
Uh-huh.
That I can remember.
Uh-huh. So you didn't have a favorite one? One that you connected with the most.
Well, this what we call the mental symbol.
Yes. Uh huh.
Is that proper English for it?
Yes, and I don't want to use too many specifics because
no.
Then we get into the part about you know what's public and what's private. But
yeah.
More in general, I think it's very interesting to have a favorite one, one that you connect with immediately, and then to have one that's sort of a challenge. And for everybody, it seems to be different.
Okay.
So I don't know if you had that experience, given your enthusiasm for the practice.
I don't know. I think that there was enthusiasm for all of three. I cannot recall. Maybe that I don't know how to address them then, but I think that there was more interest for the second and the third than the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Because in a way, I had the feeling that those two had to do with that longing, that feeling of longing to something, and that these symbols could help me to overcome the gap, to make
uh-huh.
what we now call then the absolute and relative universe.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But this was more intuitively than by understanding.
Right. And then did that prove to be true for you, that they assisted you in bridging the gap?
Up until today they did, yes.
Yes. Great.
So that is why I'm still a practicing Reiki master. It is mm-hmm. still my, it probably will be, will stay my discipline.
Mm-hmm.
This is my path.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And up until today, I think that well, I sometimes flirt with some other ideas and I read books and but I think that in essence, Reiki can offer whatever one wants to find.
Uh-huh. That's a beautiful way of putting it. Because I think that sometimes people go looking for something else because they haven't found it in the Reiki practice, and perhaps they haven't looked for it.
Well, they haven't found it. They haven't found it soon enough.
Right, right.
Because we live in a culture that is very individualistic, and that we live in a culture of that we believe that we can make our own world.
Uh-huh.
Instantly, with one push on the button,
uh-huh.
we can have it. And this is something that takes time.
Uh-huh.
And I think that for a lot of people that is that takes some kind of a mind shift to realize that you can purchase any kind of goods instantly, but not this kind of new consciousness. That takes time, whatever path you take.
Right.
And so you can shop around and make your own spiritual patchwork of all kinds of things, but I don't know if that will fasten the journey.
Right. Well, you know, what's interesting for me is that we use this word time to talk, for instance, right now about a relative instantaneous kind of experience or instantaneous understanding. And what I think the other way that we use the word time is has to do with preparation. Like, let's see, I don't feel as though I have seen in my practice of Reiki that each experience that I have had in it has prepared me for the next one.
Precise.
And if I didn't have that preparation, it wouldn't be the time, whatever this word means, it wouldn't be the time for me to go to the next step. So one of the things that Reiki has given me has been an enormous trust in this step-by-step process of time and my time, you know, my preparation, my willingness to receive, my whatever seems to come next. And, you know, in my conscious mind, I feel that what I want now is the right time. But often, I'm not prepared for the gift that could come to me. So it comes to me later, because then I'm prepared, then I'm in my right time. And this is a really different use of the word time for me. And echoes what you're saying, that you can't purchase this timing. Right.
No.
And we're so used to purchasing time.
Yes.
Isn't that weird? And
well, if you compare it with other kinds of things, for instance, in psychology, it is shown that the time one needs for grief, if you lose your partner or your parents or whatever, is not fastened, although the total community and the world is going faster.
Right.
But grief takes the time it takes.
Exactly.
You cannot speed it up. And I think that's a good that's a good thing to compare with the path of spiritual growth. It takes the time that it takes.
Right. So interestingly enough, you know, in that particular, given that particular idea, I began to recommend that people wait for a calendar year, 12 months, before they took second degree, because I felt that in this continuum of life, to have first degree and to have the first degree practice in all four seasons, which meant a cycle of life for each human being, I felt that that was important. And, you know, I know that some people take second degree 10 months, or some people take it 1 month, and some people take it, you know, 12 years after they've taken first degree, which is in their own timing. And the master, I feel like masters are more able these days to refer back to the student's timing rather than to participate in allowing the student to purchase a faster track by giving them second degree whenever they want it.
Well, maybe, but I always advise my students to wait for a year.
Me too.
Absolutely. Because also when I look back at my own history of Reiki, I cannot precisely determine the difference of the effects of Reiki 1 and Reiki 2, because they were so short after one another.
And, you know, I think that back then, in the beginning, certainly for me, it felt like it didn't matter the time. And then when I realized what I had actually gotten into, I realized that in the continuum of a lifetime of practice, 1 year wasn't actually all that much to ask for. And I felt that when I taught students who were more steady and more clear in their first degree practice, that it was, they were prepared for their next step, which was to receive the symbols.
Yeah.
And that the symbols held within it certain underlying ethical and integrity questions that wouldn't be addressed so clearly weren't addressed so clearly when the student had first and second degree very close.
Yes.
So the whole question, for instance, about permission to use the symbols with another person wasn't so clear back then when I was initiating people 3 months, say, for instance, after the first degree, because the students had not experienced that hands-on so much, so they didn't understand that there could be situations where it wouldn't be appropriate ethically or within their integrity as a Reiki practitioner to actually treat someone, that they could say no and that they needed to say no sometimes.
Yeah.
And that experience doesn't happen in 3 months.
Now, what I also do in my Reiki 2 class is that I turn around the question from, do you appreciate it that someone treats you with some kind of technique on a distance without knowing, without that you know it? And the students say no.
Uh-huh.
They don't want it.
Uh-huh.
And then it's immediately clear.
Immediately. And that's a good tactic. Well, the symbols continue to be an incredible gift in my life. And I continue to have different experiences with them, in the sense of I feel like they are leading me somewhere, but I don't really know where. And I know that it's deeper into what excites you, which is this mystical part of our existence as human beings. And I'm just wondering if that's your experience also.
Yes, it's my experience also. And then we come back to the what you started with, the element of money and the element of symbols. And I think that our practice that is given shape by those nine elements,
mm-hmm.
Have an inward side and an outward side. And the inward side is how we use them for our journey.
Mm-hmm.
And the outward side is our connection with the relative world.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where sometimes tensions come with the secrecy of the symbols or the value of the money, of the prices for classes and those kinds of things.
Yes.
But it doesn't really matter for the inside of the elements, because that's for our journey and they suit us very well.
Mm-hmm. But it's when they come in contact with the relative world that we need to be clear about the boundary between the relative world and the absolute world.
Yeah.
Because in the absolute world, and a lot of the practices of Reiki say this, that if they are God-given, or if they are meant, to be used in this way, then why shouldn't they be known to everybody? I mean, why should there be any separation of secrecy and so on? And it's in that place of where we then step in and with the value of preparation and say, well, but it's important that human beings be prepared for each step of their journey, and this is a step that is obvious that preparation is beneficial.
Yeah.
Not just for the student, but also for the people that they practice on.
Yeah. Well, I think that you Americans have in the Army an expression for it. Information based on the need to know.
Okay.
How about that?
How about that? I like it in this context. Great, Yo-Yan. Okay. So, we don't always need to know.
No, we don't always need to know.
And that's another huge step of understanding, actually, that comes from this practice and comes from the use of the symbols. Like, there are so many questions for me about where do they come from, what is the value of symbology in the human consciousness, all these questions. But I don't need to know the answers to the questions in order to gain benefit from the use of the symbols.
Yes.
And that piece, to have questions without being attached to getting them answered, that's another, I think, a great breakthrough in human consciousness, because it prepares us for the mystery, which is where we're all heading for, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, yes. It gives it a special kind of freedom in your head.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't wait to be able to read your thesis, and I trust that some caring, wonderful translator will translate it into English.
Well, we'll see about it.
Yeah, well...
Well, I wish you good luck with your study Dutch.
Yeah, thank you. And maybe one time, I don't know, it'll just come to me, but I don't think so.
Well, we will sort something out.
Yes, exactly. Well, Yo-Yeon, thank you so much for this conversation. It's been wonderful.
Yes, for me too. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And for you listeners, I don't know if we kind of went off the deep end sometimes in our conversation, but you know, this is exactly where the symbols lead us, as far as I'm concerned. They really lead us into a land of many questions, not many, many answers, and yet a satisfaction in knowing that there is, we could call it a sacred tool that we, or sacred tools that we've been given in second degree, that allow us to extend our understanding of our human consciousness by leaps and bounds and through time according to our own individual preparation. And once understood, this allows us, as students of the practice, great freedom, because we don't need anything more. We don't need something out there that will prove our worth. We already have it. And once that's understood, then you're open to all the gifts that these symbols and this practice have to offer. And Yo-Yeon is a prime example of somebody who has these principles, you know, steady in your hand. And I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Yes. And I think it's wonderful that you can also use your quest for knowledge in a way that supports that those understandings rather than trying to repudiate them. And I think that this is really a miracle.
You think so?
Yeah, I do, because I feel that one of the differences of your thesis, for instance, is not about proving anything, but it's about creating a deeper awareness and understanding of how to hold these seems like self-evident truths to our greater benefit.
Yes.
Rather than trying to speed them up or slow them down or make one better than the other. There's none of that. It's just accepting these principles as you've learned them from your experience of the practice and applying them to an intellectual enterprise that I feel can only benefit. So that's really exciting.
Well, I think you picked it up correctly, and I hope indeed that it benefits our community as a whole.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes, me too. So I can't wait, and I really appreciate the other masters who were able to write out their experiences and allow themselves to be a part of your study. That's great.
Yes. Well, I'm very grateful for that also. Yes.
Yes. And should this study prove to be of great interest, then the next step for me would be to ask the same number of first degree students and second degree students for the same kinds of experiences and see if there is some preparation that happens, if you see a red line of preparation to go into the different levels of initiation, or if their experiences are very similar, and that I think there's a notion that you need to be a master to have some of these experiences, and that's not my experience. That's not my observation.
Okay, yeah. Yes, and it can also be interesting to copy this experiment into another culture, for instance.
Right.
With American Reiki masters.
Right.
Or, for instance, with Russian Reiki masters.
Oh, that would be very interesting. Very interesting.
Because there's a long-going discussion whether or not mystic experience are leading to the same point. And
right.
And there is some kind of what then is called pre-mystical consciousness.
Right.
Or that mystical experiences are more or less shaped by influences of culture and religion and so forth. And so it might be very interesting to copy this research into another area of the world, for instance, what I said, America and Russia, to see if the same characteristics come out of them.
Right.
Come out of it.
Well, you've definitely, you've got a good, what is it called, population to tap when you start doing your next papers.
Oh, my
God. Well, thank you very much, Yo-Yan, for everything.
Thank you, thank you.
Yes, and thank you, listeners. And you'll be hearing from me again next week with the theme symbols. And this element is so rich for all of us, and I'm really appreciating our ability to talk about symbols and to go to the edge of what I would call our way of holding them, which is that they are secret and sacred. We'll talk more about that next week. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.